At Prairie Gardens, our custom framing experts see the big picture and give it the perfect frame. Photos, keepsakes, art, you name it, we can frame it. Surrounding what you love with the best moldings and matte combinations around at the right price. Whether it's for you or a gift for another, we'll create a frame as special as the memory that's in it. Prairie Gardens Custom Framing. Frame the moments that matter. Springfield and Duncan, Champaign.
Well, good morning. I'm Tamara McDaniel, and this is Plant Experts live at Prairie Gardens. Join us if you can. We're at 3000 West Springfield in Champaign at the corner of Springfield and Duncan. Or you can join us by phone. The phone number is 356-9397. Or even text in your questions or comments at 351-557. We have our plant experts standing by, including John.
Good morning, Tamara.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Steve Brown.
Good morning, Tamara.
And we have special guest, Jim Wersch.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. I'm so glad you could join us again today.
Me too.
Yay.
Marianne's walking around here somewhere, too.
Marianne Metz is here, and she is attending to business at the moment.
Linda's
here. She'll be joining
here.
Us shortly. Yeah.
There's a bunch of them.
I know. Lucas is here.
They're all over the board.
Yeah. You have some great people here on staff.
I agree.
Yeah. And I noticed that you got a truckload of gorgeous annuals in.
Yeah.
A big truckload.
Well, lots of truckloads.
Oh, did okay.
it's been shipment city this week. So not only the early season cool annuals that we talked about, we got an incredible selection. Some of the most unusual pansies and with smaller frilled edges and more veining in the petals. It's unbelievable.
Kind of the more traditional face pansies, too, which I like.
Yeah.
But they look back at you.
Yeah, they do. That's a good way to describe them.
Some of the big jumbo or ginormous, I guess we call them. Yeah, great faces.
Ginormous. And some beautiful planters as well that you've already put together.
Yeah, some mixed combos. You can just take them home and plop them on your porch or your patio table or have some color.
Yes.
Lots of nice color. Plus, trees and shrubs are rolling in right and left. You got a truckload in from the West Coast this week.
Yep.
And then you got a bunch of trucks in from the Midwest this week.
Nice stuff on that West Coast truck, too.
Yeah. We were talking about how it just looks a little bit different than getting through an Illinois winter.
It sure does.
it's just a little bit further along.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Some great early perennials are in, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, like what you were just looking at.
Oh, yeah, I was taking some.
Yeah, we had the there's violas are just blooming up a storm, looks terrific. We've got dianthus, columbine, aquilegia. So
the hellebores are out there. In
oh, the
really
hellebores. Yes.
They're nice.
They're beautiful, yes. Yeah. So just an amazing shipment in.
Absolutely.
So I know you. I actually was working last weekend out of town, and I got to listen to the show, and Jim and Marianne were just so wonderful. I was going to text in and say, great job. And then, of course, I forgot. But I know you had a little bit of time talking about some of the early season perennials last week. But, John, you wanted to carry that conversation on a little bit further?
I think we should, and maybe even get into a couple of the trees or shrubs that are coming on soon.
All right.
Good. Yeah. That sounds great. Before we get into that, though, happy St. Patrick's Day to y'all. And I just have to say, okay, happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day. That's what she said.
There you go.
Here's Illinois. The shamrocks, you said you're going to have a sale on them today?
Well, Susan did a markdown on them. So any remaining live shamrock plants, and again, I think there's four varieties over there, are on sale for $247.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And only $499. So get them while they go. And,
beautiful
and again,
blooming.
More than just St. Patrick's. Enjoy them as a houseplant. Yeah. Enjoy them as a planter and then morning sun, filtered sunshade, in a combination planter for an unusual texture.
Yeah,
they're terrific in a combination planter. Yeah.
They are. That's a great idea. I hadn't even thought about that. That would be gorgeous in a combination planter.
Well, you should listen to this radio show on Saturday mornings.
Well, you know, you're right. I'm just so busy talking.
Yeah.
No.
So, Jim, did you say you had some hellebore just emerging like about a week or 10 days ago?
I did.
Marianne said she had quite a few blooming.
I checked them yesterday just to see how far along they were, and several of them are in bud. One of them is in bloom. I have a white one that's a newer cultivar that is in bloom. So they're coming on.
Okay. And how much sun, how much shade do you have yours in?
Well, they're kind of in a real difficult spot in my garden. I challenged them a little bit. But they get about half-day sun, and in the summer it's filtered.
Okay. And then, so winter sun, does the foliage burn a lot on yours? Or
well, the wind burns the foliage out of my house really badly. So this time of year, I take off most of the winter foliage because it looks pretty bad.
Sure.
And the new foliage is coming up with the buds itself, so they look real fresh.
Do you have a favorite?
No, I don't. I like the darker colors, and I like the semi-doubles.
Yeah.
So I like the newer ones. Years ago, we had one that was a newer cultivar, and we got it here, and it was a European one that was used sometimes as a Christmas flower.
Sure.
And I like that one really well, and it kind of blooms twice a year for me. It will bloom around Christmas time if the weather is right, and it'll bloom again in the spring.
Did you have a name, maybe even David, or do you remember?
It was a man's name, yeah.
Yeah, I can distinctly remember potting those up to sell them as an alternative to a traditional Christmas flower in November, December. Yeah.
And it was very hardy. I mean, it's doing quite well.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like the hellebores would be one of the perfect things for somebody who had a woodland garden.
Yes, I have a couple. Yep, blooms are starting to emerge. And as Jim said, a lot of times that foliage over the winter gets gnarly and burned. So it's really nice to take that off, and then you get, as you said, the fresh new coming up. And really kind of the blooms tend to come up before the new foliage or kind of along with it.
And I do have crocus in bloom. I noticed yesterday I have crocus coming up in the garden, and they're in full bloom. So yeah, the early stuff has started.
Yeah, crocus. I have some great calanthus or the snowdrops.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any of these bulbs planted near the hellebore?
I do, yes.
Okay. Yeah. But the crocus or something else?
The crocus, definitely. I don't have any of the snowdrops, but I have a lot of crocus because they're good bee food. We talked about that in another program. So that particular area is where I have most of them.
Okay. I can just visualize the combination of these early spring bulbs with the hellebore and some of the perennials, just making a complete picture.
Well, and you hit it really well, Steve. I use that area for a woodland-type garden. I have a lot of native wildflowers in there and early stuff that don't get interfered with when the leaves of the trees come out. So it's a shady garden in the summer, but it's got a little bit of sun this time of year.
Okay.
Yeah, and then right along behind the calanthus are daffodils.
Yep.
So they're starting to shoot up. So once those are done, the hellebores are starting to fade away, blooms, then we'll come on with the daffodils.
Well, that's what the perennial garden's all about, isn't it? It's that tradition. It's you don't get that constant same thing blooming. You've got a plan. It forces you to think bloom time and foliage and things like that.
Yeah, and then what'll come along? A lot of as you said, I have a lot of woodland items that are just by Mother Nature there. And then a little bit later will be the Virginia bluebells.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice.
And they're usually kind of on about the same time the daffodils are. So it's pretty with that blue and yellow combination.
And a completely different foliage look. So you have a contrasting texture to the daffs, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
About how long will the bluebells stay around?
A few weeks, a month. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Depends on Mother Nature and the heat, too. If it gets really hot, they'll go more quickly than if it stays cool.
Good point. Good point. This is Plant Experts live at Prairie Gardens, 356-9397.
We were just talking about could we dig a hole or not? Is it too wet or not? And you wanted to describe how, if you were tempted, how you might probe and take a look to say, can I do it or not?
If I'm thinking about planting a new tree or something like that, which it's a good time of the year to do that, if you can get in a garden, I would pick the spot. If I have a place I have to put it, I'm going to test the soil and just to see. And I'll take up a spade of soil and I'll look at it. And if it holds together really tight and it looks wet, I won't continue on. But if I can take it in my hands and make it crumble or it breaks down real easy, then it's probably okay to work the soil and to put something in.
Good.
Yeah. Yep. That's the best way, you know, put your shovel in, get a scoop.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to, stay together in a clump, it's too wet.
And I'm not too worried about that top inch or so. You know, if we say if we just had a light sprinkle and it's a little bit wet there, but if you get down a couple inches and of course deeper, and if you, and like Jim said, if you can lift it and then you can take your hands and crumble it and make it fall apart, then you know you can do the job. If it's going to mush together even worse and just be heavy and clingy, you're just working against yourself, and you could cause irreparable harm to that area of the soil.
Well, sometimes you can cheat a little bit. You and I were talking about that before the show, is if you've got a high spot in your yard, you might get away with it a few days earlier than you would another spot in your yard that's a little lower.
Okay. Yeah.
Or if you dodged some of the precipitation yesterday or last night, if you didn't have much, which I don't think too many of us did, get the high winds tomorrow, some sunshine tomorrow, and some rain possibly coming back in Monday, go ahead and cover that area with a tarp. And then if you can dodge that, then maybe you're going to have enough drying. Remove the tarp then on Tuesday. You're going to have enough drying Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Perhaps you can dig then if you can't now. So depending upon how badly you want to do something, you can usually find a way to make it work.
I think that's a smart thing to do.
Very smart.
Cover it up.
Cover it up. Just keep it all dry. Kill off what might still be there.
You know, I think a lot of us are lamenting this cool weather, but one of the really nice sides of this cool weather is for us who have fruit trees is we're not seeing that premature growth that makes those blossoms come out early and costs us lots of fruit crops. So far, I'm kind of pleased with the cool weather and keeping things not ahead, but kind of on schedule. So
your peaches are behaving. Huh?
Everything is behaving. Nothing is budding out premature, so that if we have a late frost, it's going to get whacked, which is not to say it can't change, but right now we look pretty good.
Good to know. Yeah, I forgot that does happen.
There's that silver lining we've all been looking for.
Got to find one somewhere.
Yeah, okay, it's a good thing it's cold. My peaches will taste.
You do.
I just don't mind the cold. I just want the sun to be out.
True. You know? That's a very good point.
Yeah.
So back to the early season perennials. Some other favorites that you guys like or anything that you'd want to say, hey, take a look at this right now.
One of my favorites is the Aquilegia or the Columbines. Mm-hmm. They're somewhat of a native to United States. Mm-hmm. And really just so pretty and delicate. I love the foliage.
That's exactly what I was going to say, delicate.
And then the blossoms are...
Do you like the more traditional forms, John, or do you like some of the newer blossom shapes?
I like the traditional, yeah.
I even like the native one, the one you mentioned, the kind of pinky red one with the yellow inside the flower.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Seems to be the tougher of them, too. Sometimes the newer ones can be a little wimpy.
Hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, they've developed these kind of what they call double blossoms or you know, changed the character of it a lot, and I'm not sure if those are as hardy, but they probably are.
I like the blue shades a lot, and I'll gravitate towards the blue because that's such a fine color in the garden and so rare. And there are some nice blue columbines out there.
Yeah,
beautiful blue pansies out there too.
I think when you get back to the columbines, as far as doing well, again, if you can have a well-drained soil, you have a much better chance of them surviving.
And it's that same environment you and I were talking about earlier, Steve. It's that woodland, sun, a little bit of sun in the early spring, and then shady.
Yeah.
It's that perfect environment for them. You should have tons of them where you're at, John.
Yep. Tons to be had.
Tons to be had.
Coming up. The Sangamon River.
To be built upon.
I saw the poppies out there. Wow, are they gorgeous. I had to take a photo of them. How difficult are they to take care of, or what am I getting myself into if I were to get some of these poppies?
So, again, they need to be drained soil.
Okay.
And poppies, I kind of tend to think more full sun, really.
Yeah, more full sun, and I think some of the poppies can be a little twitchy if your soil's not exactly right.
Really?
It took me several years to get a good bed of them going, but the thing about them is they're relentless. Once you get a bed established, you've got it. I mean, they're one of those flowers that survive on homesteads that are abandoned 20 years once they get established.
Okay, but it's just getting them established that can be a little...
And John hit it. I think it's well-drained soil, a sunny location. They don't like to stay wet in the winter. They really don't like that.
And maybe just a little... bermed or higher.
Okay.
And the variety you're looking at there is a little bit earlier blooming one. Typically the ones you should see here are more of a traditional grandma's garden.
Yeah. I think that's Orientalis.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And that'd be later on.
Yeah.
And so that'd be more of a, oh, my iris are blooming. Oh, my poppies are blooming and yeah. You know, that kind of thing.
But you're right, Tamara. They're a spectacular perennial plant when they bloom. They're just a real attention getter.
Yes, and just the variety in the coloring, too. Just the bright orange to a red orange, and then like a bright white or a bright yellow. Yeah, stunning.
I know we've got a couple saxifraga out there right now. We've got more showing up this week, so those will be blooming in fairly short order, I think.
They're budding up. Yeah,
for most people.
You know, sometimes white flowers can be kind of tough. They're doing away getting a good white flower. And a good spring flower, a perennial for me, is Iberis, candy tuft. And it's white. And I like it because it is just pure white. And not only is it white, it's kind of glossy. It actually, the petals kind of reflect the sunlight a little bit. That's a perennial, the spring perennial that I like a lot.
Nice fragrance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it a significant pollinator?
Yes, I see the bees work it for. I don't think it's much of a nectar producer.
Okay.
I think it's more of a pollen producer.
Okay.
And again, you know, that's something that likes it cool.
Yeah.
And the longer the cooler it is, the longer the flowers are going to last.
If you're really on top of it, you can get it to rebloom. If you're good with deadheading, it'll rebloom for you at least once. I don't know that I've ever had it rebloom in the fall, but I suppose it were possible if it was happy, because it does like the cool weather.
Yeah.
And that's the saxifraga you were discussing?
No, Iberis.
Candy tuft.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
What else is out there that's catching your eyes?
The sea thrift.
Okay.
Yeah.
Armeria.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Armeria. Yes. Those are beautiful.
Kind of delicate, spiky foliage.
Uh-huh.
And then you get that beautiful hot pink blossom rising up out of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Almost a grass-like foliage.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool.
Good point. Yeah. Just stunning. So well worth the time to on out here and stroll about at Prairie Gardens.
So if you were tempted to dig, we talked about how you might test the soil and see if it's appropriate or not. And if it's a little bit too wet, again, consider drying off, perhaps covering up the space going into the rain Monday and then uncovering again to see if you could get back out there and do something. Have you done anything in the vegetable garden as far as thinking about sowing those peas or thinking about sowing that lettuce?
I have done some clearing off. I didn't get a lot of that done in the fall, so I have done some clearing off, and I'm certainly thinking about peas. I wouldn't be too afraid of onions either.
Oh, I wouldn't be either. Mm-hmm.
Potatoes aren't far behind.
No, not at all.
So,
and we're hoping that the shipment of onions and potatoes all shows up today. There's a chance.
Oh.
And if they're not here today, they'll be here on Monday. But yeah, any of that stuff, I would, if I could work the soil, I'd be right in there.
And maybe lettuce and radishes right behind that too.
For sure.
Yeah.
Strawberries, maybe.
Yeah, if you can work the soil, absolutely,
you could. Okay. Strawberries, good.
And we have the plants here, so.
Yeah, if you could work the soil, asparagus, strawberries, rhubarb, carrots, spinach, radishes, lettuce, all that early season stuff, snow peas, I'd be on top of it.
It just does so much better if you get it in where it's cool, rather than have it to mature in the heat. It just doesn't do nearly as well.
Huh. That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that. I wouldn't have thought of it that way anyway. But
yeah, some of these vegetables, like we're mentioning, just when it gets really hot, they just shut down. They don't like it.
Hmm. Okay.
And I can tell you, just from experience, vegetable gardening does so much better if you don't in raised areas, mm-hmm. than in just going out and digging up the dirt, and you really got to amend the soil with compost. But over the years, you know, I've done it both ways. But if you don't border off the raised beds, you can certainly just raise it.
And just by adding a bunch more dirt.
Yeah, you just
mound it and hill it.
Mound it, hill it. you know, however you want to do it, but, you know, layer it with compost and organic matter.
I don't think you can get too much compost, John, in a vegetable garden. I think it's impossible.
Yeah? Okay, good.
The more organic material you can get in there, the better off you are.
Absolutely, yeah.
Terrific. 356-9397. This is Plant Experts Live at Prairie Gardens.
Could we mention the spring open house coming up in 2 weeks then? Hard to imagine. But it's two successive Saturdays, so it's March 31st and then April 7th. And then we've got some of the seminars. I don't know if we have a list with us here, or if not, they can just go to prairiegardens.com and see the schedule of events, I believe.
I know I'm going to be doing fruit trees on the first weekend.
Nice.
So we're going to talk about how to raise backyard fruit and try and answer some of the questions out there that are kind of mysteries for new people getting into it, or maybe people who've done it for a while are having problems with it. And we'll talk about newer varieties and older varieties and
great,
maybe some heirloom stuff. We'll talk about a lot of stuff with trees and maybe doing a little pruning too.
Dwarfs.
Yep, we'll talk about dwarfs and semi-dwarfs and how those are made. And it'll be a good background class for fruit.
They're all pretty much grafted. Is that
almost all fruit trees are grafted,
That's interesting. So, yeah, that'll be a very interesting seminar.
So when it comes to the small fruits, do you have a preference in terms of either because of rewarding ease, lots of fruit production, less maintenance? Is there, I mean, you grow raspberries, I know. I think you grow blackberries
as well? I grow blackberries. I grow actually more blackberries than I do raspberries anymore. But I have a few of each.
And you have grapes too?
I do not.
Okay.
Years ago, they were such a problem with Japanese beetles. I kind of got out of it. And now there's not so many Japanese beetles. I probably ought to get back into it, but I don't do grapes anymore.
Okay. Yeah, you better get back into it.
I'm sorry?
You better get back into it.
I should.
It doesn't sound
like
you're into enough, Jim.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I have 1 minute available.
Yeah. Better fill it.
I'll help you dig the posts and stretch the wires.
But we really enjoy the small fruits. You're right, Steve, and they're really rewarding. They don't take a lot of space. They take a little bit of pruning to take canes out at different times of the year, depending on what you've got.
And how selective are you on the cane pruning? Are you pretty diligent about not being...
I'd say about half as good as I should be. But, yeah.
You don't just do it with a lawnmower, then, you're saying?
No. I'm a little better than that. And so the blackberry variety I grow is one developed at the University of Illinois, and it's called Illini.
Uh-huh.
It is not a thornless variety, which shares wicked thorns, but the canes tend to be pretty tall, so I'm pretty good at bringing the canes down and getting the old ones out. So the problem I have with it is the rabbits will actually get in the canes if I don't fence it off in the winter. They'll chew on the canes, and I'll lose some of the newer canes.
Yeah, that'd be tough. And it's not like you can just have a fence absolutely everywhere around your garden.
It starts to be an aesthetic thing, yeah.
You said they do have varieties that are thornless?
Yes, absolutely.
And how do they taste?
Chester.
I think they taste good.
Okay,
I mean, it's thornless. Blackberries tend to have a little bit of a bitter edge anyway. They're not, at least I don't think they're nearly as sweet as a raspberry.
True.
So, I have a couple of Chesters stuck back in the corner, and they're doing okay. But this Illini that I got years ago, it's a mover and a shaker.
Lots of fruit production.
Okay. Huh? A lot of fruit, yeah.
And are blackberries like blueberries where you're better to have more than one species?
No.
Where they can cross-pollinate?
Not so much.
Okay.
No. But pollination is a huge issue. Bumblebees and honeybees both love both the cane fruits, blackberries and raspberries.
Huh. Good to know.
Nice. Yeah, speaking of, you're talking about the rabbits, I've had I don't know how many calls this week about what happened to my rose bushes or my shrubs over the winter.
Really?
Yeah. I went out to prune, and they've already been pruned.
They've been pruned.
Oh, boy, have they been pruned.
Yeah.
Wow. But there's kind of, other than fencing it off, there's not a lot you could do, is there?
You can hope they didn't take the graft off that it'll sprout and put some protection on it now.
Yeah.
Any kind of like an animal urine or something?
Repellents, yeah.
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 The problem is just being able to reapply throughout the course of the winter fairly often and having it persist.
So a
physical barrier, whether it's fencing or tree wrap or depending upon what type of plant you're trying to protect, is really the best way to go.
tree wrap. That's a I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, that works out well on the trees. That'd work well on the berry bushes. On like Jim was saying, you really just have to, if you're going to do it, you have to do a fence, and then it's a matter of saying, how much do I want to look at that fence relative to the risk of the problem?
Or actually, you know, you could take the fence down, but it's just another gardening job. You know, put it up in the fall and take it out in the late spring.
One more thing to store.
Okay. But that's all right if you have a shed. If they're really important to you, otherwise just feed the rabbits.
But it's like, okay, I could use that 2 hours to do something else.
Yeah.
And my patch is so large now that I just, they get a few of them, and I have more than enough left of them. So it's, we have reached an agreement. That particular plant.
That's good that you're able to come to that agreement.
And the show cats probably aren't going to really be a deterrent.
No. No.
They're not going to be out there.
Oh, you couldn't. They wouldn't know what outside was if it hit them.
Steve, is a vegetable garden one of the things, that one of the options that somebody could win with the open house? You're giving away a dream garden, right?
Yeah. We've done this for, I don't remember how many years now, maybe 7 or 10 or 12 years, but it's win your favorite dream garden. And so I don't know if it is this year or not. I know in some years we've had like a $400 or $500 your choice of any fruits and vegetables. So you can buy fruit trees, berry bushes, herbs, anything edible. And so John's looking for the list right now. But traditionally we've had anything from your choice of X number of Japanese maples, your choice of X number of large ceramic pots or any pots that you'd choose. Mm. We've had the edible garden. Sometimes we've had a rose and clematis garden. But during the open house week, that's something you can register to win. And we'll draw one lucky winner for that too. So it's been a real fun thing. It's, again, it's kind of thing where you may not be able to either afford it, or you wouldn't think to treat yourself to something on that scale.
Like $500 worth of ceramic pots. But boy, could I pull some out that I would love to have.
Yeah.
I could spend that easily.
So that would be my choice if I were to win it.
I think I can't decide. It's between the perennial garden or the ceramic pots.
Well, you don't want to take this loser mentality that you're only going to win 1 year.
Oh.
So why would you limit yourself?
Because I do have the luck of the Irish on my side.
Yeah, so I think you could try and win this year, and then you can just figure, well, I'm going to win in another year or two
it's, and if nothing else, it stimulates dreaming and thinking, and, well, you know what, maybe I could make that happen anyway, even if I don't win this year. But
John just verified that we do not have that list with us, but we'll make sure it's available on prairiegardens.com if it's not already, and certainly as we get into the open house weekends, the March 31st and April 7th, that we'll have that information
out
there.
It's just like yet another reason to come to the open house.
Oh, yeah.
That and the seminars and the sales.
Yep, for sure.
The seminars are going to be great, especially, you know, beginning on the 31st, we're going to have Diane Nolan here.
Aw.
She's going to cure her common spring fever.
Are we going to drag her out of retirement?
Absolutely.
Good for us.
We are.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
When it comes to gardening, I don't think she's ever out of.
No.
I don't think she's retired.
No.
No.
That's great. That'll be really interesting.
Yeah. So,
then,
you know, she'll be talking about perennials and annuals and combining all types of things, which is great. And then we have Rena Jones here talking about landscaping 101 for bees.
Oh, yeah. So excellent.
The listeners might remember that Rena was on the radio with Jim, about a month ago or more now?
About that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It was right around Valentine's Day, wasn't it?
She's terrific.
Yeah. Well, your enthusiasm and Rena's enthusiasm for that topic is just fantastic. So that appearance, like, oh, gosh, could you come back? And so she agreed to graciously do a seminar on the 31st, which is fantastic.
Well, and as we know, we've seen a decline in pollinators, so anything we can do in our gardens to kind of feed the pollinators and try to get them more active and procreate and happy, that's just all the much better.
So
right?
What do we got going on after that one?
Then
after
we have
Rena?
Sean Williams. He'll be talking about heirloom tomatoes. He's a local grower of some tomatoes and peppers. So that's going to be
really knows his stuff.
Super interesting. Yeah.
Well, talk about collecting and some things of interest. That's a pretty easy thing to kind of get into.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot of money, doesn't take a lot of time to do this one versus that one? You get a few tips, and then and how rewarding in July and August and September to be able to harvest that fruit.
Oh, yeah. The taste is so different. It's so much better, the heirlooms, so many of the heirlooms.
Absolutely, yeah. And I love the different shapes and the colors and textures, which is really
yes.
something that's really cool.
Yes, there
kind
are
of
a
like
lot
heirloom of apples. Some of them are just downright ugly.
Yeah, they are.
Some of the tomatoes are too, but the flavor's there.
Oh, yeah.
And what's that really interesting one at Saturday at 1 o'clock on the 31st there, John?
That's Jim Wersch.
Ah, that's fruit trees.
Oh, yeah. Fruit trees, yay.
Fruits to nuts and more, huh?
Yep.
Perfect for me.
Exactly.
Right?
We have a nut talking about fruit. So that's the lineup for the first Saturday,
yep.
March 31st. And then on the 7th, then we've got not-so-common tropical container combos with...
That's a kickoff with me
with
during the
Mr.
day.
Mr. Weisgarver on April 7th. Then we got Fiery Peppers. So Sean Williams is back at 10:30 on April 7th to do one on all the peppers. And that category is just increased exponentially, just like the heirloom tomatoes has the last few years
people,
in terms of interest.
Pepper. Yeah, you're right. Peppers are very... popular these days.
Like pepper crazy.
Oh yes, and just the enormous variety that's out there.
Well,
the
we'll
ghost peppers,
we'll
green peppers.
We'll definitely have
peppers,
our best selection ever. There's no question about that.
What's fun for me is last year I did this when I worked inside with fruits and vegetables for a while, and I would get customers. The customers are so much better educated now about peppers and tomatoes, where they come in and they'll ask for a variety by name, and sometimes. With peppers particularly, they would catch me unaware, and I'd have to do a little bit of research myself.
Well, that's one of the 2,000 I don't know.
Yeah. but they knew it, and they knew exactly what they were looking for, and I like that. That's great.
That is great.
And then we'll have Mike Weber here, who's a local garden enthusiast, horticulturalist, talking about conifers.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's a fantastic garden.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Him and his wife have an absolutely beautiful garden.
Huh.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm guessing it's filled with conifers?
There are a lot of them.
It's filled with a lot of things, but the conifers are there. And the neat part about that garden is the structure in the winter is just as phenomenal as it is in the summer. I mean, some gardens don't have that, but they've done an excellent job of not only – acquiring some really neat things, and they've been there for a long time, but they've placed them so well and so interesting, and there's so many little rooms and pockets in their garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting with the Weber garden, and I won't steal Mike's thunder, but it's kind of gotten bigger than his yard. He now gardens for his neighbors, so his garden kind of extends into his neighbors' yards, and they like it. I mean, it's a good agreement. So he's got a bigger than a than his lot space garden in town, and it's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, how cool is that to be able to extend it, into the horizon where you're not stopped by a big fence or something, oh man, is that our yard ugly?
Well, it'd be like the three of us where we just decided we'd move to the country where we had more space. More inventive than that. He convinced his neighbors to let him garden in their yard. So
brilliant.
I like that.
Yeah, pretty
and
smart.
I think the neighbors are probably happy too because they don't have to, it looks a lot better and they don't have to work on it.
And then the last one on the April 7th is what, John?
Yeah, absolutely. Our own Marianne Metz will be talking about perennials and container gardening. So who wouldn't want to listen to that?
Mm-hmm. Actually, wait, container gardening with perennials?
Yeah.
What, do you end up having to put them in the ground before winter, though? Or I guess I'm going to have to take this.
Really depends upon
seminar.
The perennial. Some will overwinter fine in a container, and some are more delicate and would not. And it's a great way to extend your budget for planting, so you can incorporate some of the perennials in the containers during the spring and summer months and grow them there and then transplant them into the garden for the fall. So it wasn't just an completely an annual purchase that you had to throw away. Mm-hmm. You had some perennial value there that you were able to then transplant, add to the garden. So each year you could incorporate a few perennials, enjoy it for its texture, its flowering habit. And
it's surprising what will survive, too. Some of these I've discovered by accident. You know, you'll find a plant on a sale table and I'm just going to put that in that container because I like the way it looks right now. And then the next thing you know, it's there again next year, which is just really awesome.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Or have you ever reused soil and they have something pop up that had stayed behind?
Yeah, I think Marianne mentioned that she did that with some oxalis, that she put the container in her garden shed, and some of the pips overwintered and came back stronger than ever with that. And I think certainly depending upon how protected it is, that can happen. But whether it's a sedum or a hosta or whether it's a heuchera, there'd be a fairly long list of perennials that would do well in a container garden and would survive years and years. And it wouldn't have to be that large of a pot.
No.
I think, especially if Marianne was sitting here, there would be at least more than one person around the table who would say, oh, yeah, I never got around to planting that sedum, or I never got around to planting that heuchera or whatever, and it stayed in the pot that you bought it from outside, above ground.
Wow.
And no worse for wear.
No kidding.
Yep.
That hardy.
That is hardy.
That is hardy.
I mean, and sometimes you'll have a surprise in your compost pile.
Oh, yeah?
Sure.
I can see that. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I think they need to put that on my list for tomorrow. I've got some peonies I never got planted last year that are in a big mulch pile. So I think I might as well go ahead and pull them out and get them in a sunnier location because they're going to start thinking about poking their head up pretty soon.
Nice.
Okay. Make a note to self on that one.
Yep, plans for the yards this week.
Yep.
I took out a bush this past week.
Yes,
it just was not looking prettier at all, and I didn't want it really at all anyway, so I just went, okay, it's going. Whack, whack, whack.
So what are you going to replace it
with? Nice. Actually, we're thinking about doing some seeding and then I just want to do containers. I think that would be a lot easier, and then I can mix and match and rotate what I do have out.
Easier rodent control too.
I hadn't thought of that.
Get them a little bit elevated, the rabbits.
Yes. Okay, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we have to do the whole thing where you add dirt to the outside of your house anyway because it has compacted over the years and it isn't.
You need to slope. Get more slope and grade away.
Yes. That's how you explain it. That's good. Slope and grade.
Yeah. So, you're probably going to want it to be
go away
6 or 8 inches below the siding, if you will, kind of thing. And then slope it away as rapidly as you can.
Right.
I mean, within reason. What would you think? Probably a 4 to 6% slope, something like that?
Yeah.
That's all? That's not bad.
It depends. If you did that over a fairly short distance, that would seem fairly steep. If it was spread out over a long distance, you might not notice it as much. But if you did that within, 8 feet or 10 feet, that would look like a pretty significant slope.
Okay.
So
good.
But you could play with that. It's easy if you don't have it out, just take a 2x4 or some other board and go ahead and prop it up to that height that you think you need to build it up to and let it just angle out over what length, and that'll give you a good visual before you start doing it.
Wow. I love that you know so much about this, too.
Well, we've all made kinds of mistakes.
Oh, yeah. We've all
We have a lot to draw on.
Well, yeah, and sometimes if you have an older home, even if it's 25 years old, somebody may have planted a shrub that's too close to the house, and then all of a sudden you find where it's like sinking in, and then it's creating water to go back into your foundation, into your basement or crawl space. So
that's exactly why we need to do that. You're right, and just I guess just after a while the soil will erode and compact anyway around houses.
Well, it definitely compacts. I mean, particularly if you've got new construction, and even if your house is older, I'm sure over the years there's been some soil compaction from when they backfilled around the foundation when they built the structure. Mm. With that somewhat, and redo the grade or an addition on our house because the dirt is settled.
Yeah, and I think that's really the main thing.
Yeah.
That it settled and it wasn't either filled in and compacted as it went or something like that. So I think erosion's probably not too much of a factor unless you don't have a gutter or a gutter that's overflowing in disrepair, so it's coming, spilling over, and then washing out right underneath the gutter line. But that's typically then going to be another maybe a foot to 2 feet out from the foundation wall itself. But it's something to take into consideration when you're choosing plants, because if there isn't a gutter or if it's not maintained properly, that overflow right there is going to definitely have an impact on what you're trying to grow below.
Yes. Yeah, I have a barberry bush that is growing very close to a rain gutter, a shoot.
Uh-huh.
And boy, it seems so happy, but I can't decide whether to keep it or get rid of it. And
wow.
Barberry,
you're just purging,
bushes,
aren't you?
Though, we're just, well.
Yes.
I'm making my house my home.
There you go.
And you know, it's just, I just want an excuse to work outdoors anyway, so.
Well, I can think of other things besides pruning barberries that would be rewarding. If I'm going to prune something with thorns, it's probably going to be because there's going to be a fruit on there that I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah.
If not, I'm not there.
I would consider definitely removing the barberry. One of my least favorite plants ever.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Another thing you and I agree on.
But it's a spring bloomer, I guess. Yeah, I'm really not crazy about the barberry bush. But then I looked it up, and it said it's a spring bloomer. And so
I flowers are basically non. There's not much satisfaction in the flower. They're typically white or perhaps a light yellow color. There's not going to be anything that's going to turn your head.
And you're going to have to watch it real close.
I wouldn't call them nondescript, but I would almost call them nondescript.
Yeah.
Oh,
pretty
okay.
Daggone close.
It's typically the foliage color is why somebody would plant a barberry.
It is pretty and purple.
Yeah. And so if that floats your boat, great. And if not,
right.
Out of there.
Okay. The thorniness of it is just really what discourages me, especially with little grandkids running around. I just don't want. I mean, I'm going to have to figure something out once I get my what's the yellow roses?
The Julia
Childs. Julia Childs. That's it. I kept thinking Betty Crocker. I knew that wasn't right.
Somebody in the kitchen. Okay.
But the Julia Childs rose bush, just so gorgeous. I've wanted one for so long now. And yes, I know I'm going to have to deal with thorns with it, but
that's different.
I would say roses are worth
the right
it too.
Spot.
Fruits
absolutely.
And roses are worth the worth the
are
thorns.
Worth the thorns.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just remember to sight it where it gets full sun.
Okay. And then well-drained soil again, or does it like the water like a weeping willow?
Oh, no.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, good to know. And Julia Childs, they come in like another maybe month or two, right?
We may have some now.
We're not sure yet, but we'll know off air.
You do. You're starting to get roses.
We're sorting through.
I love it. Truckloads of flowers coming in each day and beautiful plants. Here at Prairie Gardens, you've been listening to Plant Experts live at Prairie Gardens with Jim Wersch, John Weisgarver, and Steve Brown. I'm Tamara McDaniel. Our executive producer is Jim Lewis. Stay tuned for Saturday Sports Talk. Up next, you're on News Talk 1400 WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. And keep in mind that we will have a podcast of this show made available later today at WDWS.com. You can also find podcasts of previous shows at WDWS.com. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend.
Ready, set, it's spring. Extraordinary gardening, home decor, and more is waiting for you this week at Prairie Gardens. You'll love the spring sale event with handmade pansy swags only $19.97. And all silk stems save 50%. Plus an incredible selection of Easter decor you'll adore. Create the aroma of spring in your home with Yankee Candle tumblers, 2 for $20. Everything you need for spring is waiting for you here at Prairie Gardens. Extraordinary gardening, home decor, framing, and more.